Okay, today's the topic of today's shiur is the issue of Ma'aser Ksafim. And if you don't know what Ma'aser Ksafim is, you'll find out very, very soon. It's a subcategory of Hilchot Tzedaka. And since the issue comes up all the time, anybody who earns salaries, anybody who gets gifts, whether you're working 5 days a week from 9 to 5, or you have a summer job somewhere, your grandmother sends you a birthday present, all these issues, all these situations, and many, many more, begin to touch on the issue of Ma'aser Ksafim, and today we're going to discuss at least some of the basics of Ma'aser Ksafim. So let's begin with source number one. The pasuk in Chumash Dvarim, in Parshat Re'eh, says, "Aser ta'aser et kol tvuat zarecha hayotzei asadeh shana shana." That a person has to take the grain that grows in his fields in Eretz Yisrael, and what does he have to set aside? Ma'aser. There's a Ma'aser Rishon, there's a Ma'aser Sheni, there's a Ma'aser Rani. We mentioned it a little bit last week. We talked about Tu B'Shvat, but you have to set aside Maser from the grain that grows in Eretz Yisrael. It includes, at least on a Derabbanan level, any fruits and vegetables, any grains that are growing in Eretz Yisrael. There's an issue of setting aside Maser. But this, at least at first glance, doesn't seem to apply to my salary. Like, money doesn't grow on trees. At least that's what they claim. But only fruits, vegetables, grains, things that grow from the ground, you have to separate Maser. But salaries, gifts, etc., doesn't seem to be any connection at all. However, in source number 3, the Tosfot in Masechet Tanit says as follows: Aser ta'aser, hachi ita b'sifrei. This is how it says in the Medrash Halacha: Aser ta'aser et kol tvuat zarecha yotzei asadeh shana shana. Ein li'ela tvuat zarecha. I only know from the pasuk that you have to separate grain. Shechaya b'maser. Ribit ufrakmatia v'chol sha'ar rivachim minayin. What about all other types of profits that are gained from ribit? What's ribit?
Interest.
So of course you should immediately ask me, isn't that usur? The answer is, it's only usur to lend money to Jews to ask interest. For goyim, if they're willing to, you can charge interest from a non-Jew. What does the word frakmatia mean? Frakmatia means business, selling merchandise. V'chol sha'ar revachim, and any other profits that I make. How do I know I should separate ma'aser? Talmud lomar, et kol. Dahavi matzi lemeimer et tvuatecha. Why does it say kol? Lerabot ribit ufrakmatia v'chol dover shemarviach bo. The pasuk adds the word kol to teach me I have to separate ma'aser from all profits that I make. The language of the Tosfot, quoting the Sifrei, seems to tell us that separating a tenth of all my profits is what kind of mitzvah? It seems it's doraita, because the Sifrei learns it from an extra word in the pasuk. That's what seems to be. It's a mitzvah d'oraita. The Maharil, in source number 4, in a very brief comment, says, "May high timer b'maser ksafin dirabanan." He learns that the drasha is not a real drasha. It's what kind of drasha from the pasuk? It's an asmachta. There's a hint in the Torah for a din dirabanan. But according to the Maharil, giving Ma'aser Ksafim is not a mitzvah midoraita, but mitzvah midrabbanan. However, the Marami Rutenberg had a third approach. And if you take a look at the upper left in source number 5, the Pitchei Tshuva begins to discuss the following question. We'll just read the bracketed area. Le'inyan Ma'aser Ksafim, imu chiyuv gamur, is in an absolute obligation.
Chuvat, next bracket, Chuvat Maharam Rutenberg, the first Prague and the Prague edition of the Chuvot, Simonayin Dalet, Mivuar Sham Kedat Habach, She'eino Mehatorah, Velo Midrabanan. Giving my Sikhsafim is not a mitzvah d'oraita. It's not a mitzvah midrabanan. Ve'eino Ella Minhaga Ba'alma. What is it? It's a minhag. But you shouldn't think it's a minhag. The third bracket. V'chein ala b'sefer mishnat chachamim. Hilchot yisodi ha-Torah daf yudzayin shein l'masik sofim ikah lo min ha-Torah lo midivrei sofim. Aval im nag havi kamo minhag shel mitzvah she'ein levatel klal im lo l'tzarech gadol. What kind of minhag is it? It's a very important minhag. A minhag shel mitzvah. That one should not be mevatel if there isn't a great need. What's mevatel? Shouldn't get rid of the minhag. You shouldn't abolish the minhag. You shouldn't discard the minhag unless there's a great need. So we have what seems to be three approaches. There is an opinion that seems to say that it's d'oraita. There's the Maharal who clearly says that it's d'rabana. And there's the Maharal Mirudenberg who says it's not an absolute obligation, but it's a highly, highly recommended minhag. Recommended, but not demanded. There are quite a number of achronim who accept the approach of the Maharal Mirudenberg. And they say that one could treat the issue of Maisik Safim not as an absolute mitzvah, but as a highly recommended minhag. And of course, the moment that it's not exactly an absolute mitzvah, but a highly recommended minhag, then already there's more room for leeways, discussion, taking into account extenuating circumstances. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in source number 6 as accepting the Maharam's approach, and he writes as follows. Lefnei she'adam mafish ma'isik sofim b'pami rishona. Before you begin to separate ma'isik sofim, you're starting to earn a salary and you want to separate ma'isik sofim. Before you do it for the first time, tzarech lahatnot shekol in yanav yeh b'li neder. He should say, I'm doing this all b'li neder. O yichlo lotam bataris nedarim b'erev Rosh Hashanah, or at least included in hatarat nedarim, if you didn't say it to begin with. When you do hataris nedarim on erev Rosh Hashanah, include this in there. Why? Im eino osa et zeh nehepechet lifamim she'elat minog ba'alma l'she'elat nedar midoraita. You see, if you don't accept it as a neder, then it's a minog. The moment that you don't say it's b'li neder and you do it regularly, then it becomes a neder. A neder is a din d'oraita. You don't want to turn the minog into a neder d'oraita because then the questions are much more stringent. But you see from Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach that he is assuming that as long as you don't accept it as a neder, we're going to treat Maisik Safim as a minhag. A highly, highly recommended minhag, but a minhag nevertheless. Okay. So somebody asked me, said they thought that Maisik Safim is a skula. Right? I don't even know how to translate the word skula. But they says it's a skula for what? For parnasa. I don't think they're married. Come on. I know we're a seminary, but it's a skula for parnasa. So is this like one of these old wives' tales? Is it really true? So the Gemara in Tainis on Daf Tes in source number 7 says as follows: Ashkechei Rabbi Yochanan liyanuka de Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan once saw Reish Lakish's young child. Amalei Emali Psukecha. She said to him, no, little child, Yingale. I don't know if he spoke Yiddish, but he said to him, he says, tell me what pasuk did you learn today in Cheder? Amalei Aser Ta Aser. He said, I learned the pasuk Aser Ta Aser, source number 1. Amalei Umay Aser Ta Aser. So why does it say Aser Ta Aser, double language? It's Rabbi Yochanan asked the young kid. Amalei Aser Bishvil shetit asher. What's lehit asher? Now, put aside maser, in order that you should become an ashir, so that you'll get rich. Amalei menalacha. So Rabbi Yochanan asked the child, how do you know it's going to work? Amalei zil nase. So the little child turns to Rabbi Yochanan and said, try it! You'll see it works. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan said to the little child, Umi shari l'nase l'kadosh baruch hu, are you allowed to test God? Okay, God, I'm going to test you. You're telling me I'm going to get rich. I'm going to test you. V'haksiv lo tenasu et Hashem. The pasuk says you can't test God. Not allowed to. Amalei, so the little child says to Rabbi Yochanan, Hachi amar Rabbi Hoshaya, chutz mizo. You're right, Rabbi Yochanan. You can't test God except on one thing. On giving ma'aser, you can test God. Shenemar, he quotes a pasuk from Malachi. Heviu et kol ha-maaser al beit ha-otzar. Bring all your maaser. V'hiterev b'veiti. U'bechanuni na b'zot. You all know what a mivchan is. What's a mivchan? So what does it mean when Hashem says bichanuni? Test me, says Hashem. Bring your miser and test me. Im lo eftach lachem et arubot hashamayim v'harikoti lachem bracha ad belidai. You bring your miser and I will open up the windows in the heavens and rain upon you a bracha ad belidai. So the Gemara says, what does it mean, a bracha ad belidai? My ad belidai? Amar Rami bar Chama, Amar Rav, ad sheyivlu siftoteicha milom merdai. I'm going to rain on you so much of a bracha that your lips are going to wear out. You're going to turn to me and say, Baruch, enough already, enough. Okay, Beseda, I see, you're paying back more than enough. Okay, we got the... Ad kedekach. You give maisa and you get it back. Gemara says, not only do you get back the ma'aser, what does it seem to be? You become rich from it. It's a school of Fosha. Now, if we read just this Gemara, we might have assumed that which ma'aser is it talking about? The ma'aser in the pasuk, ma'aser rishon, ma'aser sheni, when you have to ma'aser ani, when you have to separate from your crops. Who says it's talking about the ma'aser that you separate from all profits that you make? So the Ramban Shulchan Aruch quotes this idea even regarding that ma'aser. Even regarding the ma'aser k'safin, separating ma'aser from profits, monetary profits, he says that this thing applies. So you give ma'aser and you get it back. You get it back. And I can't... It's very hard to do a laboratory experiment because you never quite know what's going on. But I can tell you from personal experiences, you give ma'aser and all of a sudden monies that were unexpected just sort of come from somewhere. Not the next day, not the next week. But you take a look back and you say, this was something I didn't expect, and this was something I didn't expect, and something came over here, and something over there, and I thought something was going to cost me a lot, and it doesn't cost me nearly as much. And you go to the dentist, and you don't have cavities for the first time in who knows how long, and you know, the dentist says, you need a root canal. No, maybe you don't. You think this. So lots of things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has lots of ways to pay you back. The Gemara says, you don't lose out from ma'aser. The contrary, it is a schooler for wealth. It's a schooler for wealth. Okay, it was a question. Before we get into the dinim of ma'aser. No? Okay. So now, let's talk about the question. How much do you give in staka? In source number 8. A din in Shulchan Aruch, in Yaradeya, in Silchot Staka. The shir nitinasa, the proper shir for giving staka, im yado maseget, if you're able to, You have a very, very large bank account. You have very deep pockets. Yiten kifitzorach ha'aniyim. How much stakah should you give? Kifitzorach ha'aniyim. What does that mean? As much as the aniyim need. Now, if you live in Yerushalayim and you want to pay off the needs of all the aniyim, it's going to be like almost endless. But let's say you lived in a town somewhere, and there was an X number of aniyim, a finite number of aniyim, and you had very deep pockets. What should you do if you're able to? Support them. Give them what they need. You're not so wealthy. If you want to do a mitzvah min amuvchar, how much do you give a chomesh? How much is a chomesh? 1/5, which is how much percentage? 20%. For those of you mathematically challenged, right? 1/5 is 20%. That's mitzvah min amuvchar. That's above and beyond. Right. That's how much compared to Maisa? How much is that?
Double.
But that's if you want to do mitzvah min amuvchar. Ve'echad me'asara mida beinonis. What's the average that a person should give? Echad me'asara, 10%. Pachot mikan, if you give less than 10%, ayin ra'a. What's ayin ra'a? What? It means you're stingy. If you give less than 10%, it means you're stingy. 10% is the average, 20% is mitzvah min amuvchar. Now, 10% of what? Every year I take 10% out of my bank account? 10% of what? For profits. So the Shulchan Aruch says, the Chomesh Zeh, he's talking about a Chomesh, but the same thing would apply to the 10%. Sha'amru Shana Rishana Me'akeren. If for the first time, I never gave Maisa before. So the first time I take 10% of my wealth. And after that, I don't keep taking 10% from that wealth. After that, Mikan Ve'la Chomesh Reviach B'chol Shana. I take a look and I see how much did I make this year? 10% of, again, he's talking about 20%, it's not on a move car, but 10% would be of my profits. Whatever profits I made, I would give 10%. So, for instance, we're not going to get into all the discussions, but if a person runs a business, let's say he runs a business, so what do we call his profits? We don't call how much. We don't call what is the country. We don't call the brutto amount, right? The total amount of money that comes in, because in running his business, what does he have? He has expenses. So we take about all of the income the business brought in. You deduct all of your expenses, salaries to employees, everything that was necessary to run a business. You pay rent on a store. You take this in, right? And then your net profit. Every year, my net profit came to $50,000 was my net profit from the business. So how much would Maisa be? $5,000. If my net profit was $500,000, then $50,000 would be the Maisa. Says the Ramah, Va'al yivaz beis adam yoseh mechomesh. Don't spend more than the 20%. Shelo yitztarech labriyot. What does it mean, shelo yitztarech labriyot? Because what happens if you spend too much money? Then you could become a poor person. And you'll be innocent. You start giving away 95% of your profits, and you're going to end up begging on the street corner. Maybe. So, the maximum, says the Ramah, is how much? 20%. But what happens if I'm Bill Gates? He makes a lot of money, no? Or used to. Right. What happens if my income is $10 million a year? That's my income every year. So you say, don't spend more than... How much is 20%? 2 million. Because if you spend it, you'll only be... Because you're only leaving yourself with 8 million per year. So maybe. But for some people, it may be 80 million next. So the post can ask, can an ashir muflag... What's an ashir muflag? An extremely wealthy person. Can he spend more than 20%? Or is even an extremely wealthy person limited? So it's actually machlokes achronim.
Moshe Feinstein in source number 9
writes, Ubishulchan Aruch Miforash is explicit. Shahamechaber Rabbi Yosef Karo Sover Debiyodo Maseget Muchiyav Litankivitzar Chaniyim Avshu Yotam Mechomesh. If you can afford it, you should go and pay whatever the Aniyim need. But Al Kopanim, the next bracket, Haramasha Katav Al Yavaz Beiz Yotam Mechomesh, Bitstaka Polig Visover Shah Asur. He says you can't spend more than 20%. Except to save lives, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you shouldn't spend more than 20% on stocking. On the other hand, hold on a few questions, a couple of minutes. The Chachmas Adam in source number 10 disagrees. And he says, Asher Muflag, an extremely wealthy person, can spend even more than chomesh. And that's the way many, many poskim paskim bizmanenu. If a person is extremely wealthy, they shouldn't necessarily limit themselves to 20%. There are people who make not only millions of dollars a year profit, there are people who make tens of millions of dollars a year profit. And there are some who probably make hundreds of millions. And you should limit yourself to 20%. You can give a lot more. Chachmas Adam says. Even the Ramah says there's one person who can give more than 20%. Even the Ramah says you can't give more than 20%. There's circumstances you can give more than 20%. What are the circumstances to give more than 20%? So back to source 8, the Ramah ends off and he says, V'dafka kol yemei chayav. Aval b'sh'at moto, yachol adam litein staka koma sheyirtza. If a person realizes that he's dying, what can he do? He can give a lot. Why? Because the whole reason the Ramah is worried about if you give away too much money, what will happen? You'll become dependent on others. But now, unfortunately, the person is reaching Me'av Esrim Shana, and he's leaving this world, so he doesn't have to be worried about becoming dependent on others. Therefore, what can he do? He can give away a lot more. And the Gemara tells a story that there was a person, one of the Chachamim, was dying. And he said, I'm taking a very long journey and my suitcases are too heavy. He's leaving this world. And what do you mean his suitcases are too heavy? It's too much stuff to schlep. What's he needed for? So he gave away lots of his money to tzedakah. Even then, the Aruch HaShulchan suggests a limit to how much you should give even when a person's dying. What do you think his limit is? 50%. Why does Bichlali have a limit? He says because you should leave something for the children. But again, if you're an Ashir Muflag, if you have an estate worth 100 million, maybe you don't need to leave 50 million to the children. Maybe the children will manage to survive if you left them 40 million. I know it's going to be tight, but maybe they'll be able to do it. So, but in general, the Aruch HaShulchan suggests not to give it all away. Of course, if somebody's dying and the Lo Aleinu doesn't have children, it's a different story. Okay, we'll pause here for a moment before we continue. There are a number of questions. Rivka, yeah. No, no, from what your wealth is, because you never took maaser from that.
Right, so let's say your wealth, I don't know, is like inheritance and things like that, like were out of your control. Like it wasn't like you worked, I don't know, like let's say somebody like our age, let's say.
Unearned income, as they say in the IRS.
Or just like somebody our age that like, I don't know, maybe they've been given presents throughout their life and they have money they don't even know about, like how do they...
If you don't know about it, so then you don't know about it.
Like they didn't know about it at the time to give maaser.
So you could give now, right? Yeah. But you have to be careful. If the money was already spent, right? To start going back and now taking money on, you know, if the money's in savings, you never did anything with it. So now you can give maaser. Right? But if the money was already spent, and now you're going to start taking money from somewhere else to compensate, that is a different story.
Okay. And also, what if the money that's there was master taken already from it, meaning like let's say you have an inheritance from grandparents or I don't know what.
So it's a little tricky. If the maser was taken before the money changed hands, then when the money changes hands, new maser needs to be taken. Like, if somebody gave you a gift and said, listen, I want you to use the whole gift, and after they give you the gift, they say, I'm going to separate your maser. I'm going to, for my money, for you, then you wouldn't have to. In other words, I give you a gift of $1,000. But I don't want you to have to give $100, my successor. So I then take an extra $100 out of my pocket and say, this is the miser on the $1,000 that Rivka got, and I'm giving it on her behalf. Okay. Yes?
So if you're given a large amount of money and then you put it in a bank, so you take myself from it and then you put it in a bank and then you earn interest.
So on the interest... Right, on the interest. The interest is much less than depending on what it is. Right. Yeah. Okay, let's start with some.
Okay. In what intervals do you have to give maaser?
So, the maaser, it's not a good idea to do it once every 50 years.
Because, what's it, like, is it your money to give, or is it already the whole government's money? So, let's say...
No, it's your money.
A bad money.
Especially if you hold that it's a minog... It's only a minog. It certainly has no rights to it.
But if you have, like, let's say a bad month,
so
can you say that this month you won't give, the next month
you
give double?
So you can, what you can do is you can figure, you can sit down, depending on when, after Rosh Hashanah, and take a look at all this year's profits, or after, where some people do it is when they're filing their income tax. When people are filing, I don't know what it does in European countries, but in the United States, so the fiscal year is from January 1st through December 31st, and then you have until April 15th to pay your taxes. So at some point between January 1st and April 15th, people start collecting all the data, right? How much money I made, you get statements from all over, from stocks, from banks, from this. You get a little piece of paper from your place at work of how much money you made, your salary, etc. So you can collect all that information and figure out halachically what you deduct, what you don't deduct, etc., and then come up with a number. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't give any tzedakah all year until that one, give it all at once. It could be you can keep track of tzedakah that you gave during the year and then see, okay, now that I put it all together, I see that this year I should have given $6,000 to tzedakah. And I take a look at all my receipts from tzedakah, and I find out that I gave $5,000. So what do? I'll add $1,000 more towards last year's cheshbon. And if it turns out that I gave $7,000 when I needed to only give $6,000, so in theory I could say either I decided to give back more than maaser, or $1,000 that I gave already would be towards this new coming year. Right? That was $6,000, the next $1,000 is towards the next year. You can work it out that way. One more.
So with the 20%, can't you interpret it as if that the 20% on stocker, but if you have, let's say you really do have too much money, and you could basically go and get, I don't know, a manicure, but can you invest it in something like that doesn't really have anything to do with you? Like, can you invest it in some charitable business that you might have an offer, but then it would be considered stocker?
You talk about past the 20%?
Yeah, exactly. When we said that, you were only allowed to give stock of 20%.
Oh, you're saying if you want... Right. So you want to invest it. You want to, I don't know, invest it in somebody who needs it. Yeah, I guess you could. But if you know that you're never getting it back, then you have to be a little concerned.
Because you could invest it in whatever you wanted. That's
correct. If it's a real investment, sure. Sure. Yeah.
So
the chef first. So he takes it, there's a profit that he made, but then he has to deduct all his expenses. Then we're talking about the net profit.
Is a regular person allowed to do that?
Yeah, that's, well, it depends what expenses.
Not the person that owns a business.
So we'll talk about it. We'll talk about deducting expenses. You see, in a business, the question is how much profit I made from the business means how much came in versus how much it cost me to make it, then that's the way to figure out the net profit. But if I make a salary and then I spend the money on buying a car, you want to know, can I deduct the price of the car from the thing? That we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Okay. Anna. Okay, Bezrat Hashem, we'll see that Maisa money does not have to be given only for poor people. It can be given for other tzedakah purposes, but it should be primarily for poor people. And poor people means people who aren't making enough money to meet their basic needs. What their basic needs are is debatable, but a lot of poor people out there. Emma? See, the question is whether he means saving lives in general or he means saving lives directly. Well, no, what I mean is like this. In other words, there's somebody who's being held for ransom, and unless we pay the ransom money, he's going to die. Or there's somebody who needs a liver transplant, and unless somebody comes up with $200,000, the person is going to die. Supporting Hatzalah is an extremely worthwhile course, extremely worthwhile. But there isn't necessarily, you know, a Pikuach Nefesh case sitting here right in front of me. So it could be your Moshe was talking only about the cases that I mentioned. Could be. But others disagree with him much. Okay, now, let's go on to talk about some of the more halachas involved in terms of Maisik Safin. In source number 12, in the Sefer Alichos, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, it talks about what type of profit or income that a person makes does he have to separate Maisa from. So he writes in L'Yud Aleph, Mafrisha Maisa Mikol Revach, from all types of profits, Bein Mischara Avua Avoda, your salary, Me Rivachei Esek Bischora, your business profits, Mischirut Dira, you have an apartment that you rent out and people pay you rent. That's a profit. Uvein mimatanot kaspiot, somebody gave you a monetary gift, $100 for your birthday. It's a nice present. Mitziah, what's a mitziah? You found money lying on the street. No one claimed it. No one could claim it. You kept it. That's a profit. Oh, Yerusha. What's a Yerusha?
Inheritance.
Right. However, he writes in the next line, if someone gives you a tangible gift, they give you a sweater as a present, they give the bar mitzvah boy a sterling silver becher, you know, kiddush cup, you get married and someone gives you a menorah, the minag, he says, is it's not to have to be mafreshit.
What about a gift card?
1 second. V'yesh cholkim. And some disagree. A gift card would probably be more like a gift if you can't turn the gift card into cash.
Would you give back the gift?
What?
Then maybe.
Although they tell a story. They tell a story. Not, some are cholik. I think they tell a story about Yaakov Kamenetsky, that he was honored somewhere and they gave him a some sort of very nice kiddush cup. And 2-3 days later, he sees his wife going into the silver store and asking the guy in the silver store, so how much does this cup cost? And somebody overheard the conversation and thought it was very crass, like Rabbi Yaakov was trying to figure out how much the gift was. And then she starts explaining to him, my husband said that we should give Meiser from the gift, so I wanted to know, we understand how much it costs, so we know how much Meiser to give. So there are chokim, but I think he writes that the more accepted custom is that if it's a tangible gift, if it's not monetary, it's not money, then you don't have to give. One second. The next paragraph, you'd bet. Hamikabel b'matana kesev al menache yishtamesh bo limatara mesuyemet bilvad. This very often happens. Your grandmother sends you money and she says, what should you do with the money? Buy yourself a nice outfit, a nice sweater, a nice blouse, a nice outfit. Buy yourself a nice outfit. Now, she sent you cash, but she says it's to buy an outfit. She sends it to your brother. And what is he supposed to do with the money? Come on, the guy, what's he going to do? Go out and eat something. Like, treat yourself to a meal of papagayas. That's to be a big gift, right? If you're not in Rav Berzon's class. Anyway, so if it's already assigned a purpose, pata milahafrish mimenu maisa, then you don't give maisa. Now listen very carefully. Al kein talmidim v'talmidot shekiblu mehoreyem kesev lahotzaoteyem. Your parents give you money for your expenses. It's not at all uncommon, especially here in Eretz Yisrael.
Mehaschum shenitan likniat mazon or levush v'tashlum schar limudam p'turim.
The money is for your expenses, for food, for transportation. If you need to buy some clothing from time to time, you're going to people's houses and you got to give them gifts for your expenses here, there. They give you money. Do you give maisa from the money they give you?
No.
No. It's set aside for a purpose.
Chishvu hotzoteyim v'notar kasev.
If you have a set amount. Some people don't have a set amount. The parents say, listen, I trust you. When you need money, take it, but don't overdo it. But let's say parents say, listen, I want you to, this is what we're giving you. I don't want to say, I'm afraid to say a number because you'll laugh at me. It's too high, it's too low. But let's just say, for argument's sake, it's $100 a month. That's what to cover your expenses for the month. I don't know, I'm getting these looks like, I don't know which way I went. So, my day was like $100 for the year. But it's $100, $100 for the month. And you have leftover. Then you have to ask your parents, Rashut, because what do you need to know from your parents? Is the leftover money yours to do with whatever you want to? Or really you should just hold it over for the next month for expenses? For instance, if parents say you have $100 a month, and in 1 month I spend $90, can I spend the next $10 at the racetrack? Do whatever you want to. It's $100 a month. That's your business. So then, on the extra $10, I would give maaser, which would be how much? $1, 10%. Or no, your parents say, listen, you have extra money. We just assume that it's going to cost you. But if it turns out that it's not costing you $100 a month, it's costing you less, then, you know, we don't want you to waste the money. So then it's really not your money. Okay. The one of the key questions that comes up, and that forgot who was, maybe Elisheva asked the question. We're a young couple. We're struggling a little bit. Right? Our income is, depends where country and what struggling is. We're making, I don't know, $10,000-$15,000 a year income. And a young couple, we have to pay rent, and we have to pay this, and we have to pay that, and da 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 da. And how much money do we have left over? After paying basic expenses, how much money do we have left over? Like, minus. So I have to give maisa from my $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. I have to give maisa from that. Making $20,000 a year, my expenses are $22,000 a year. I have to first give $2,000. That's what I'm supposed to do? Maybe not. Maybe I only start figuring out the 10% after what? After I've deducted all my expenses. Well, what's to happen? What happens if I tell people, first you can deduct all your expenses and then start figuring out my sir? Well, people will tell you, like, you only have to give my sir from your extra money. What will a lot of people claim? I don't have any extra money. And even if I manage to put away some money in the bank, what do I say? That's my savings. That's not extra money. I need to put my kids through college. I need to buy an apartment. I need to make a wedding. That's not extra. Tell people you only have to give Meiser from your extra money, and how much are they going to do? Put into the pushka? Maybe a penny or two. I don't know. Who has extra money? On the other hand, tell them that you have to give from everything you make. I can't make my ends meet. So take a look. The source discussed this. Source number 13 on page 1. Katav HaTor b'shem Rav Sadia Gaon. Chayav Adam lahakdim parnasato l'chol Adam. What does that mean, lahakdim parnasato l'chol Adam? What? He comes first. His parnasa comes first. Ve'enu chayav latet staka ad sh'yelo parnasato sh'nema v'chay achichima chayach kodman chay achicha. First, I have to worry about my parnasa. After I've taken care of my parnasa, then and only then, what do I start taking into account? Meisik Safin. So deduct all your expenses, and then start talking about Meisik Safin. Similarly, the Kitzel Shulchan Aruch in source number 14, it's in a little later piece at the end. Kami yitein adam tztaka, shanu yishana ha-maisim min ha-keren, nikan ve'elach yitein maisim min ha-revach, sheviach kol shana, and in parentheses, three words. Chutz mitzorchei beito. What does that mean, chutz mitzorchei beito? Except for the needs of your household. That you deduct. On the other hand, if you take a look at the flip side, in source number 15, says the Aruch HaShulchan, says, Bazeh shekatvu de parnasato kodemet im nomar kipshuto im kein ruban shel balei bat im ptur min hatztaka legamri. Most people won't have to give tztaka at all. Levadni shlishit shekel b'shana. This is the minimum tztaka even the poorest the person has to give, a third of a shekel for the year. So you put in a couple of pennies and that's it. If you do it, the Rav Yisrael, alavai sheyaspik lem parnasatam lo tzatam, ulefize yifteru klum, kula min hatztaka. Nobody's going to have to give tztaka. Zulat ashirim gedolim. Except, the one rich person in town, or maybe in many towns, there's one guy who has extra money. And if there's no rich people in town, all the aniyim will die of starvation. No one's giving tztaka. I'm potter. So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that maybe there's a compromise. You get to deduct, but what do you get to deduct? Maybe not even deduct. You get to take into account your basic needs. If your income isn't meeting your real, real basic needs, then maybe you don't have to give Maisa. But if you're covering your basic needs, you can't start saying, our family ski vacation is our basic need. Going out to eat in the restaurant once a week is our basic need. Upgrading the kitchen is our basic need. Buying clothing in expensive stores is our basic need. Buying a second car is our basic need. No. That's not considered basic needs. I'm not saying that any of this is us, sir. You can do all that. You can do all those things. But you can't consider that your basic need. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, what these poskim are talking about, your real, real basic needs. So that if your salary or your income isn't covering it, you're pater from Meiser. But if you're covering your basic needs and then already you should be giving Meiser. Then already you should be giving Meiser. The Tzitz Eliezer is willing to say that he's willing to side with the other opinion, that you can if you want to, that you can deduct your basic needs. But I very much understand the Aruch HaShulchan, because people don't ever look at money as being extra money that they have. And even if they put things away for savings, it's not extra. You need savings. You need money later on. You need to pay tuition bills, and you need to do this, and you need to do that. Real important things. So nobody's going to have any extra money. So therefore, you should be wary. I'm not saying that there aren't opinions, but you should be wary about saying, first, I have to cover my needs. Make sure that you're not overdoing it. Okay, questions? Yeah. Yeah, Liam. I would tell you, buying basic food for Shabbos is a basic need. But the question is, listen, I don't want anybody to go hungry and need to eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But, you know, if a person comes ahead and you go to the takeout store, right, that's usually more expensive than doing things on your own. And in Etrog, very honestly, you can, in theory, borrow... If you're the only Jew in town... Yeah, you need an esrog. But if you're not the only Jew in town, you can be mekayim the mitzvah by taking borrowing somebody's lulav and esrog, making a kinyan on it, and be mekayim the mitzvah. To tell a story about a certain avreich, so I was living in Kollel, and it came sukkah's time, and he chose like this really, really nice esrog, and he brings it to a chashev rav, he shows him the esrog. And the esrog, the rav takes a look at him, takes a look at the esrog, and he says, no good. So he says to him, what's no good? He was like, where, what? He hadn't paid for it yet. He just won. He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm learning in Kollel. He says, you're learning in Kollel? You shouldn't be buying such an expensive esrog. How much money are you making? You're learning in Kollel. Right? You need your money for other things. Buy a less expensive esrog. You'll still be Yotzei the Mitzvah. For you, this esrog is no good. A guy is a successful businessman, is making lots of money. He wants to buy an expensive. I'm not talking about noyim. It's all the fun of a mitzvah. It's good. He should be spending his money on a nice esrog. A guy's living in Kailo shouldn't be spending his money on buying such a nice esrog. Doesn't mean he has to get the worst one available. But just not so fancy. Yeah.
Can a person, like an average person who is planning on giving matzer or wants to give matzer, can they, let's say, deduct
from their income, I don't know, the price of food for their family, and give maser on that, meaning like will be a less amount
because it's a less. You mean he's making
the average person, making a certain amount of money. Right. Let's say
somebody's making
$100
and they spend $10 a year, I'm just thinking, $10 on food, can they give 10%? Can they give their maser on 90, or do they have to give their maser on 90?
So according to some, you can give your maser on
90. But is that only if it's like bread and butter, or if they're also buying like food?
Bread and butter is food.
I mean, like, they're buying more sustainable.
So, listen, it's very hard to define basic needs. You know, the basic needs of this generation are different than the basic needs not only of certainly of two generations ago, three generations ago. What we consider basic needs were the most luxurious items around. Thank you. My father-in-law tells me that his family was pretty well-to-do. He shared a bed with one of his brothers, but they were really fairly well-to-do, but you shared a bed. Now, to tell somebody you have to share a room, that's what? You know, so I'm saying that there's certain, like nowadays, you tell somebody you share a bed, and you'll say, oh, yvei, nebuch, we have to start a collection. But he told me he was growing up in this town. His family was fairly well-to-do. They had a lumber business, and there was a forest nearby, and they were doing fairly well. He didn't feel deprived, but yeah, he shared a bed. So everything is relative, yeah.
If someone gives you a gift of money, or let's say, or they give you a gift in general, or let's say that you make money from a store owner that you're working from or something, can't you assume that they themselves do give maaser?
Yes, but as I pointed out, if the maaser was given before the money was transferred to you,
so it's on your own person.
So then you have to give maaser.
Okay.
Let's go. I'm going to cover a couple of more items. If you take a look at source number 17, there's a very long source over here because it's a major discussion. And the question is the question of tuition. can I count my tuition that I pay for my children as Meister money? Because I'm giving it to an institution. I'm not talking about tuition in medical school. I'm talking about yeshiva tuition. Seminary tuition, right? Can I count it? And Moshe Feinstein's approach is as follows. I'm just going to summarize it, and others agree with it. In general, things that I am obligated to pay cannot be considered Meister money, my giving Meister. And therefore, if I am obligated to pay for my child's yeshiva tuition, I can't consider that to be Meister. Oh, what is obligated? So, says Rav Moshe, when does a father's obligation to teach his son Torah, so when is a father obligated and when is he no longer obligated? So the Gemara, and there are other things, Rav Moshe basically says as follows, and one could say, by the way, that if it came to his daughter's tuition in Yeshiva High School, maybe he's not obligated. Why not? I'm going to tell him Torah. Moshe says as follows, if you live in a country where the government demands that you send the child to school, you can't allow your child to go to public school. You must send your child to a yeshiva. And therefore, you're obligated to do so. So even your daughter, so to speak, even if technically you're not chayv in Talmud Torah, but you certainly can't allow them to go to high school, to a public school, and therefore you're obligated to send them to a yeshiva high school, whatever it is, and therefore you can't deduct that. The only thing that you can deduct, he says, is as follows. If, let's say, the tuition in an elementary school, whatever it is, that really it costs them $10,000 per student, but they charge everyone $11,000. Because since there are some people who can't pay, so those who can pay a little bit extra to cover those who can't pay. If that's the case, says Reb Moshe, what can be considered Meister money? $1,000. Speak to school administrators and they'll tell you it's never like that. They'll tell you that even if everybody paid full tuition, it still wouldn't cover all their costs. They still need donations, they still need to run Chinese auctions, they still need to do this, they still need to do that. Even if everybody paid full tuition, it doesn't cover. That's what I've heard. It's very expensive, and it's the chances of that fact that you're paying really more than what your child's tuition costs to cover somebody else's. If it's really true, then you could deduct it. But there is a stage in life when one could say that really the parent isn't obligated. For instance, what could be a tuition that you could say the parent really isn't obligated to pay, and therefore if he's giving it to a Torah institution, it can be considered Meiser? Shonabesh, on Aleph is mandatory. So you send your kid off to yeshiva, you send the daughter off to seminary. One could argue. It's not an obligation, really. And therefore, now, you couldn't count part of the payment that you would have to do anyway. For instance, even if your daughter wasn't in seminary, what would you have to do? Feed her, clothe her, but you'll say you have to feed her, etc. So that you can't count. But anything above and beyond what you'd be paying. Now, you have to be careful with this. Because let's say somebody comes along and says, great, I'll take $20,000 of the tuition and count it as Meister money. Which means that what kind of income would I need to have before I would have to give anything else? So if my net income is $200,000, I paid all my tzedakah to the year by writing out a check to Seminary X and Yeshiva Y Gamaynu. Now, that doesn't leave very much for lots of poor people and other things. You're not going to give any more tzedakah because... So, even though you technically could, the question is, you should you or not? Rav Sternbruch, in his source number 18, writes that, yes, you could treat your child's education as a tzedakah, but you're better off if you don't. You may have to, because you can't afford to otherwise. But don't, you know, hashkafically, don't look at your child's education as your tzedakah. And by the way, Poskim point out that if my yeshiva tuitions are so sky high, if I don't count them as meiser, I can't afford meiser. So the answer may be, okay, maybe you're pater from paying meiser because your expenses are so high, as we learned. Could be because of that. I've heard from Poskim. Poskim say that sometimes tuition payments are so high that people are really struggling. Now I'm not talking about people who say we have to cut down our ski vacations from 3 a year to 2 a year because yeshiva tuitions are too high. I'm talking about people who are really struggling because, and to the merit, there are some people who could ask for a scholarship, but on principle don't. I'm going to try to pay as much as I can. So you have to give them credit. Right? So sometimes you have to deduct tuition. You can read more details in source number 17. He discusses a little bit more about some of what's over there. Just to finish off, the Shlomo Zalman Orbach, well, two things. The Chofetz Chaim in his Aves Chesed says that when you're taking into account poor people to give tzedakah to, which poor people come first?
Relatives.
And they come before others. Generally, if it's not relatives, so who is it? People who live in your area, in your town, in your city, in your neighborhood. What?
Jews, even if your relatives live like really far
away. Right, yes. Relatives come first.
What about it?
Jews, I'm talking about Jews. Okay. And amongst other things, says the Chafetz Chaim, that if there are people who are poor, who are dedicating their lives to learning Torah, they come before people who are poor who are not dedicating their lives to learning Torah. If you have equally poor people, support the Torah learners before you support those who aren't learning Torah, assuming that all other factors are equal. And finally, in source number 20, Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that you could, especially if you treat it as a minog, you could count other tzedakahs. You give to the local mikveh, you give to the local shul, you give to the local school, you can give donations here, there. For this, you want to donate to a Jewish hospital. You can count that all as ma'aser. But the main purpose of ma'aser, and therefore you should try to give the largest amount of ma'aser, is designed for aniyim. Designed for me. So the local school is important, and the mikveh is important, and the shul is important, and it's all important. And you can give some of your ma'aser money. But you should keep the biggest amount, keep in mind the aniyim, because that's what it's primarily for. And unfortunately, there are a lot of poor people around. People are really, really struggling. And if you can help them out, that should be your primary goal. Yeah?
If let's say someone's on a scholarship or something,
in other words, if you're on a scholarship from your yeshiva, right, there's a boy in yeshiva, and he's on scholarship, so, and then you want to start giving significant amount of money to Mises somewhere else, I tend to think I don't think it means you can't give any tzedakah to anybody else. But, you know, to start, you know, you're getting a $2,000 break off your tuition from the yeshiva for scholarship, and you start donating $2,000 to the local mikveh, something is not quite right.
Also, if you're in debt to someone, so are you supposed to give them back first? Or?
Presumably, you should give them back first. That's what you should do.
Like,
so it depends what it is. In other words, let's say you borrowed money because you, first of all, you mortgaged your house. You take a mortgage on your house. So you owe the bank money, but there's a certain payment schedule that's meant to be paid over 15 years. And as long as you're paying, you're making your payments on time, so I don't think you have to pay everything off before you give any tzedakah. But if you borrowed money from an individual and you owe him, so you should be paying him back before you start. Unless the understanding was, listen, you borrowed money from an individual and you have a payment schedule and you're meeting your payment schedule and you don't have to pay back faster, okay. So mefarnesim aniye akum im aniye Yisrael. The Mishnah said one can support non-Jewish aniyim, it depends what you say by non-Jewish causes. For instance, if I live in if I support an organization that helps Jews and non-Jews. I live in a town, there's one hospital in town, and I make a donation to that hospital, and it helps all the Jews and non-Jews in the town. So even the Jews are helped by that. Like, to come along and say that I'm giving a donation to the earthquake victims in China, so you could give Maisa, but it's presumably none of the earthquake victims in China are Jewish. It could be, but I would definitely think that the vast, vast majority of my tzedakah money should go to Jewish causes for a simple reason. There are a lot more non-Jews in the world that should be supporting the non-Jewish causes. Right? Not too many non-Jews will support the Jewish causes. And therefore, it's like aniye ircha. It's like family. Family comes first. And all Jews are family.
Well,
they generally don't, but that's a separate problem.
Like the Red Cross, for example, like it does help technically Jews that live in Chutz Laaretz, but doesn't also.
Right. So I'm not saying you can't give anything to them, but realize, the Red Cross can appeal to 300 million Americans. The local, support the New York Jewish poor. How many people can it appeal to? I'm not saying you can't give at all, but you can come along and say, listen, look at the causes that I support in my local community. I'm willing to give to the global community, but I think people should be concerned about their local community first. And I'm willing to tell that to anybody. All right, we'll stop here if anybody has any